Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Alex McLaren. I'm an actor and I've worked as a communications coach since 2002. Now so much business is being conducted remotely, the ways in which we talk, present, build relationships and connect is changing. In this podcast, I want to explore all those issues and prove to you that no matter who you are, you can talk to anyone. Hello and welcome to You Can Talk to Anyone, the podcast where we open the bonnet on our communication engine. I'm Alex McLaren.
And I'm Tom Zielinski.
It's good to be face-to-face again, Tom, because last week we were recording remotely from London and Kent.
Yes.
This week I just wanted to talk about the things we don't talk about in polite company. Okay, so we're going to be trawling over where we learned our manners and whether they're still applicable. Somebody once said, or I once came across, the rule that when you're in polite company, you don't talk about politics, religion, or money. Has that ever been part of your set of rules?
Yes, I've definitely heard that. It's not bad advice as these things go. Money obviously is vulgar, and we're English, so we're not going to talk about that. Politics and religion are literally things that people have fought and died over.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you don't want to be... I mean, in my more... shall I say, pugnacious youth.
Yes.
I've certainly depth-charged the odd dinner party with my inflexible views about things like alternative medicine, for example.
Well, it's not that long ago. Well, I remember that. But certainly having a strong opinion about something feels like, okay, I need to exercise this and I can't just let it go when it starts to sneak into more kind of casual and relaxed circumstances. And you're describing a kind of a stage of your life, which do you think you've now consigned that to history?
Well, never say never.
Hmm.
But I think I am an older, wiser, more diplomatic campaigner than I used to be.
I think there's a sense of have I the skill to disagree in a way which allows us all to get out of here alive?
And of course, that's dependent on your opponent.
Half of it, at least, is out of your control.
You can be... the perfect diplomat, but be up against somebody who is so spoiling for a fight that there is nothing you can say short of 100% and total endorsement of their point of view that will not cause them to fly into a rage.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what it was like. I suppose when we were sort of sitting around the dinner table when I was a kid, I mean, the fact is we were exploring territory on these issues, which was laid down by... our parents, and so we were all it was a kind of shared tribal attitude, so we all felt, I suppose, safe to politically and religiously. Okay, I'm gonna talk about all three.
Oh my god.
Okay. So my parents were, when I was growing up, were Labour Party activists, and in fact I think I might have briefly joined the Labour Party when I was sort of a young Labour Party person, so 16 to 18. I don't think I've been a paid up member of any political, well, certainly not been a member of any other political party in my adult life. So that was very much kind of the sort of politics we talk about. There was no real dissent because there were people who had opinions and agreed with each other and their children who didn't really have access to alternative points of view. And our house was never full, really, I think, of people, not that I remember, of a very, very different sort of political stripe. Or if they were, they kept their opinions to themselves, possibly because there was a big yellow Labour Party poster on the front window.
It's worth saying, though, that whereas there are some children, like I think you and me, who do essentially swallow their parents' political affiliations wholesale, there are also others, the phenomenon of the Alex P. Keaton from Family Ties, brought up by a couple of Californian hippies, who turned out to be this arch-capitalist Reaganite.
Oh, entirely. I mean, and I've come across some people who think you can make quite interesting psychological judgments on the basis of whether they vote for or against their parents' party. And it's almost like we're always engaging with and reacting with our inheritance on political matters.
But if you are brought up in an environment where there is only agreement,
yes,
I think you don't learn the skill of polite dissent.
No, and I'm thinking about me and my brothers as well, and thinking about the fact that when we did have conflict, it wasn't on matters of principle. It was purely like dogs in a, in a pit having a scrap, you know. And it was all post hoc justification of the fact that I'm right. And I think that that's significantly. I wonder whether that affects my own personal sort of approach to these kind of questions. In terms of money. Now, that's really interesting because we are sort of, we don't talk about it in England. My parents were so
much. If you want to know how much money somebody earns, you just listen to how they speak. And their accent will tell you everything you want to know. Deborah, when she first came to this country, didn't sound, I think she sounded more or less the way she does now. People say they can hear a little bit of Australian there, but people trying to kind of size her up and figure out which bracket to put her in will always be a bit thrown by her accent. So then they'd ask her things like, what does your father do?
Yes.
And she'd say, he's retired. Where did you go to school? And then she'd name an Australian school they'd ever heard of. So they didn't have any of these cues to try and figure out which rung on the social ladder she belonged on.
People don't feel rich, I think. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does.
My father was a state school teacher, and it always felt a little bit like we were limping from month end to month end. But he'd inherited a big lump of cash from his dad, and we had a big house. So it was kind of, and when you're, everything's normal to you when you're growing up. And so I suppose there was always a sense that I wouldn't talk about that, partly out of embarrassment. We didn't really care about flash cars. There was that we were never spending lots of money. It was always secondhand clothes. But at the same time, there was always cash for the Wine Society deliveries at Christmas and, you know, orchestral music concerts. So it was in terms of a sort of, it wasn't a, it was probably a kind of a bit of a mix-up of embarrassment and confusion, I suppose, on that particular subject. And I think in retrospect, I almost have a desire to talk about it, possibly because of where I came from, because I want it to be, I don't want it to be a matter of embarrassment, but of course it is.
Well, in some cases, talking about money at work is essential. You're much less likely to be talking about politics or religion unless you work for one of those institutions. You know, if you work for the Pope or the Prime Minister, then those topics are much more likely to come
up.
But everybody could talk about money at work. And I can remember when I was much younger than I am now, working for a very entrepreneurial guy. And he had the local Prontoprint franchise in Oxford, but wasn't satisfied with that and was looking to diversify. One of the things he was looking to get into was selling stationery. And he took me along, I think sort of under his wing as his mentee. And we had this meeting with this stationery wholesaler. And this wholesaler showed us this catalogue, and for each item it was, here's what I pay for them, here's what I'm going to sell them to you for, and here's what I recommend you selling them to the public for. And my jaw hit the floor.
Yes.
I had no idea it was possible to have conversations like this that were so nakedly honest about the fact everybody's taking a cut.
Yeah. I suppose the whole point of capitalism is that I know how much this is worth to me and you don't. And so the margin is in that secret. And I wonder if maybe part of my desire to kind of to splurge it all out there is to try and break that down a little bit.
Well, there's a myth, of course, that capitalism has as its bedrock cost plus pricing. I buy this for X. I will then sell it to you for X plus 20%. And that 20% is a fine and reasonable amount of profit for me to be making, given that you couldn't secure this item any other way. That's not, of course, how capitalism actually works. Capitalism actually works by raising the price until people stop buying. The profit margin being entirely in the gift of the person who has the desired item.
And maybe that's one reason why it's impolite, because basically I'm busting other people's comfortable and anxious secrets by bringing it up in polite company.
But in work conversations, this is really important because conversations about money will drastically change depending on whether you have a piece of the company or whether you're an employee. And some people can emotionally have a piece of the company, even if they don't technically. You know, if you're very senior, if you've been with their same organization for a long period of time, you don't have to technically be a shareholder or a partner to feel like this is your company. But a new recruit he is much less likely to feel that way. And so conversations about money come from two very different perspectives.
They do. I've noticed conversation on social media in which people were basically, and that's a place, in fact, where those two groups of people can find common cause with their own people outside their own immediate environment. And people basically I've been told not to talk about salaries, which in the United States, I'm sure it is in the UK, it's illegal to ask people not to talk about money.
Yeah.
You know, it's very important that you do in order to be able to evaluate your commitment. To, you know, do you feel like you're getting your fair pay out of the situation? But again, maybe a little bit of the issue is that is what you're saying about that other sense of ownership, that sort of if you've been with something a long time, it becomes part of you, and it's not just about the money.
And that brings us back to religion and politics again.
It does indeed.
If you've been brought up with the same belief system, then it can be very shocking to hear somebody who comes at it from a different point of view. And if there are just things you've always assumed were true about the world that are actually true of your particular religious denomination or your particular political perspective, then it can be wrenching to hear somebody blithely making a set of different assumptions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
My family was sort of bohemian Lancashire Roman Catholic. And I think my parents, they still go to church every Sunday. And there are, back to our pockets of my family, which are very, very Catholic indeed. But it's just, as soon as I was outside that environment, for me, it just completely went away. And these days, I am an atheist, and I think everybody else is. But my family are all quite, they're able to accommodate those very different assumptions. And we can talk about this stuff, although we don't ever say, why do you believe that rubbish?
So how do you feel, for example, if you were
far away
at a business lunch and you're the only person who doesn't work for this company or some sort of freelancer or consultant, and the most senior person at the table says, let's bow our heads, and begins to say grace.
Right. I would be absolutely delighted and charmed that somebody had opted to do that, because it would be so very, very different from most people's everyday experience at work. Now, it may be that it would mortally offend some people. I understand that.
Absolutely.
But for me, my appetite for variety is can actually get me over all kinds of political and awkward fences. I'm thinking about this a lot at the moment, because I wonder if it makes me innately conservative, because I don't want people all to be right, because then there'd be no wrong people and there'll be no fun. And so in that situation, I think I would enjoy it enormously. I mean, I'm thinking of, here's an example of, has it happened to you, incidentally?
No, I don't think so.
I can't imagine it happening outside a very, maybe in America somewhere in a sort of very religious state.
Yes, I think in America, for example, you're apt to be asked the question, where do you go to church?
Yeah.
Okay. Rather than
do you?
Do you? Yeah, yes, it's assumed that you must go to a church somewhere.
Are you religious?
Does.
Are you religious in any way or just damned?
And so likewise, I can remember when I was a kid, the question was always, which football team do you support?
Yes.
Because everybody supports a football team. Yeah. And it's if you support the same one as me, then great. And if you support a different one, then I can tease you about it. Yeah. But you obviously support a football team.
Yes,
I had no good answer to that question. Yeah. I remember even as late as the last full-time job I had, being in one of those dreadful, let's everybody get to know each other by saying something about ourselves circles.
Yes.
And the question was about football. And I had to say, I've never watched a football match in my life, but I do like watching Mark Williams and Ronnie O'Sullivan playing snooker.
My theory about why football is a popular subject and religion isn't, is that football is a means for men to say they care about something without
yes.
being basically accused of being wet in any way. And it enables them to you know, jump about and hug each other. Now, here's an example of an actual business occasion. When I was running a session, it was at a business school with a group of people, and what had just happened is that there had been a referendum in the Republic of Ireland on the subject of abortion, which had changed the constitution of that republic. And there'd been a sort of a groundswell of opinion, I think, building up that abortion should be legally available to women in Ireland. The legislators had been terrified of reflecting that majority. I mean, there are some areas, for example, I think that there is a much lower desire for capital punishment in the British legislature than there is in the British population. So I find myself on different sides of what ought to happen, depending yes. on what my feelings are about the issue. But
in the 60s, the Labour government really led the way and pushed through an end to capital punishment a long time before the British public was ready.
Well before. And although it looks like a line has just been crossed in which now, if you were to have a referendum on the subject, bringing back hanging would not happen if that was the question.
I actually think that's been true for some time.
Yeah, I'm glad
about. It definitely wasn't true in the 1960s.
In Ireland, on the subject of abortion, the population were way, way ahead of the legislature, and partly possibly to do with the place of the church within our society. And Irish listeners, please update me on this because I'm not an expert. Anyway, point is, I was interested in the fact that prior to the referendum, they carried out a citizens' assembly. Whereby they'd got together a sort of a massive jury of drawn randomly as a representative cross-section of Irish society and got them together to talk about it and listen to people on both sides of the issue, at the end of which there were some recommendations put forward to the Dáil. And I was really interested in that, and it struck me as maybe it's a kind of a sort of a hot button issue solution that could be applied in the UK. And an Irish woman at the table set about straight away, because I'd raised this she started talking about how that the process of jury selection for the citizens' assembly was generally thought to have been corrupted and so forth. And I instantly realised, okay, this is a proxy for a conversation about the fact that we are on very, very different sides of this issue. So I suddenly found myself in both politics and religion all at once.
Thank goodness there's nothing in the UK which has suddenly divided families and forced everybody to pick a side.
So, for example, if we were to talk about Brexit, Tom, so we'll bleep that out before it gets uploaded. You end up with two basically alternative narratives of goodies and baddies, and you can decide which narrative you opt for rather than whether you are a goodie or a baddie. Mm. You know, Brexiteers think of themselves as heroes, as do Remainers. Sometimes you find an issue coming up which seems to be cut and dried. And I think we're in the middle one at the moment with the conflict between Russia and Ukraine.
Mm, yes.
Have you come across situations when you thought, when you asked yourself, what assumptions can you make when talking to other people about it?
No, I mean, I've got to say, to my shame, I didn't really know much about the history of Ukraine before this conflict took place. But my understanding is that Putin's narrative and the narrative which he was spreading to the rest of the Russian people was that Ukrainians are basically Russians and the Russian invading forces will be welcomed with open arms. People will be gleefully flinging their arms around tanks and rocket launchers, eagerly welcoming in those who are going to free them from their oppressors. And of course, nothing could be further from the truth. And you only have to look at how long the war has gone on in order to see that clearly that is at best an exaggeration and more likely an outright lie. What's interesting for me is how long Putin thinks he can continue to sustain this lie, because clearly that's what he's continuing to tell the Russian people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very aware that if I was speaking to a group of Russians, this would be I'd have to think very, very carefully in advance precisely where my lines would be about what I'd want to be to talk about.
We have done work in Russia. If you were offered a job today, Alex, there's an emergency.
Yeah,
our speaker's dropped out. Will you come and work with our team of Russian consultants, you have to get on a plane this afternoon. Would you go?
I'm just going back to my prior point. I think I'd have to think. So if I was actually to go to Moscow, I don't think I could do it. And in fact, the last time when I did last go to Moscow for work, I remember thinking, I don't know how comfortable I am about going into a country with such a terrible human rights regime. And then there's all these questions about global corporations quite happy to have one foot in a country extracting their local currency, which is basically bought at terrible human rights cost. And that's a question that all international organizations have to tackle. I don't think I would. How about you?
Yeah, same.
At the moment. That said, I mean, I feel I was talking to a client only yesterday who was Russian born. I wanted to reach out in a way. And I ended up saying, just solidarity to you, because I'm sure you're facing a lot of troubles, because it was not an occasion. I was paid to help this person become better at online presentation, which is, I can't dictate what they use their new superpowers for.
No.
That's not how it works. I did want to acknowledge at least that there's a very large elephant in the room. Some political questions, the noise of you not addressing them becomes deafening.
And then I think what can sometimes happen is people overdo the caution with which they raise the subject. They know that it needs to be raised, but they're so anxious about doing it.
Mm.
And I think, you know, you and I have probably both done this. They make a sort of performance of it.
Yes.
And I think what you're doing then is advertising in advance. This is going to be a difficult conversation. We are both going to be made uncomfortable. Get ready.
Yes.
Whereas you could actually simply say something like what you said without making a big song and dance about it in advance. And you never know, it might be fine.
Yes, we are making assumptions based on particular, almost like kind of tags about the character I'm engaging with, that they are going to have this consequent set of feelings about a particular issue. And that is, I mean, even if you happen to be right, it's not a good idea to go into meeting people assuming because you're X, then you must feel Y. If you're genuinely interested in their position on something, then I don't think it's unreasonable to find a quiet way, away from other people, incidentally, in order to protect them from public exposure to ask. But here's another point. These are really exciting subjects.
Mm.
And the risk is, if we have this blanket set of rules without really thinking about why, all of our conversations end up being dull. And I think that they're all, for example, they're all good subjects for comedy because the stakes are really high and people are scared, so they're likely to giggle. And so people will often recognize, oh, that person is quite exciting company. And it's because they seem maybe less frightened of scary territory, and so they're able to lead people there safely. At least they have such a grasp of, okay, we can find safe ways of talking about this and good jokes to make about this in order to make it less of a test of people and more of an opportunity. So if you're listening to this and you're wondering, how do I find a safe way of talking about these subjects? Look for ways of being lighthearted about it in order to bring the jokes in, because they also advertise your position in a way which isn't basically you making a political stump speech.
Indeed. Any homework for our listeners?
Only just if they'd like to get in touch with us with occasions when those topics of religion, politics, and money have come up, either in social contexts with people whose position on these issues you don't know, or in workplace situations as well. We would love to hear those stories, either it going really well or it going really badly. Especially going really badly. And then we'll take them apart for you next time we meet. If you're interested in getting in touch with us about the work we do with companies, please contact me on alex@the-spontaneity-shop.com.
Or me, tom@the-spontaneity-shop.com. And you can also find me on Twitter @TomSolinsky.
Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. It'll help us find new listeners. And we look forward to coming back to you next week with new adventures. I'm Alex McLaren.
And I'm Tom Solinsky.
Thanks for listening and goodbye. You have been listening to You Can Talk to Anyone with Alex McLaren and Tom Solinsky. The producer for The Spontaneity Shop was Tom Solinsky. You Can Talk to Anyone is distributed exclusively by Acast.